I just can't explain to you how thrilled I am that you gave me the invitation to do what I'm getting ready to do. I love my God, and I love serving Him, and I love traveling around the world trying to share the good story about Jesus. I have now made 31 trips to the Philippines, 17 trips to Zimbabwe, 15 trips to South Africa, 10 trips to China, 10 trips to Vietnam, 9 trips to Indonesia, 8 trips to Malaysia, and I could just keep going on. And Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Mozambique, I go into Central America, to Belize and Honduras, I go into South America, to Chile and to Argentina, I go into Europe. I was one of the first ones when communism fell. I took off to Hungary and Romania. I preached in Russia. We had a big banner on the side of the city bus. Free Bible lectures. And we rented the big convention hall. And I could just share so many stories with you. You've got my report back there, I think. I was recently on the island of Aruba. That was my 11th trip there. And so I love preaching. Let me just put it that way. And so for every picture that I'm going to show you today, there's going to be 100 more pictures from that same city that I'm not going to get to show you. And from every story that I'm going to tell you, there's another few dozen stories that I won't get to tell you. I want to borrow from Dr. Luke. Luke the physician, writing the book of Acts. He wrote this when Paul returned from his first preaching journey. It says, and when they were come and had gathered the church together, they rehearsed all that God had done with them. Now, I'm not in the same ballpark with the Apostle Paul, but I just want to borrow this verse and to emphasize what God had done. Now, I might be the messenger boy. I'm the one that gets on the airplane. I'm the one that flies across the ocean. I sleep under a tree sometimes. I'm the one that eats dog, but it's not my trip. I'm just the messenger boy. This is God's trip. And I have taken over 100 people with me on some of my trips. And somebody asked me, well, how did you get started and why did you get started doing this? And it was because of an invitation I had at Florida College to talk about evangelism, and I wanted to put it in perspective. Now, this figure was from last week, so it's probably already gone up a few people, because those women in India are putting out babies, I think, every 7 months. But here is what, last week, this is what the internet showed that the world population was. And here's what the United States population was, 341,075,000. Now, I want those figures to sink in. That the United States has less than 5% of the world population. But the United States has 90% of every known gospel preacher. There are countries where there might be one preacher for the whole country. There are other countries that I made 2 trips to Sweden before I ever even found a Christian. Now, I'm happy to tell you that now George was a student in Ghana, and George left Ghana to move to Sweden. And riding the bus to work every day, he met this lovely Swedish girl, and they started dating and fell in love and got married. And I'll show you a picture later. George is about this tall, and she's about this tall. And he's as black can be, and she's as white can be, and she's got long hair all the way down to her waist. But they have now successfully started a new church, and I have gone over 3 or 4 times to work with the church there. But these figures kept bothering me. And so I had always worked with established congregations, always had my pulpit duties. I did radio programs. I did bulletins for the church, taught classes on Sunday and Wednesday, and then sometimes in homes on Tuesday. And I got to thinking, is that you might think this is a small church. I'm going to show you here in just a moment, Indonesia has two members. Belgium has Peter and his brother and his mama, and that's the whole church. And I have met a lot of Christians in a lot of these foreign countries. They said, I've never participated in congregational singing where you're able to have all four parts. And so let's move along. I've got so much to say and do. My job is not to make Americans out of the people. I want to make Christians out of them. Now, there's a lot of things that we do in America that I think it's fitting and scriptural for us to do it. But it doesn't have to be that way. Now, there's one of the churches in Europe. I've never had this before. We start the service with three prayers. But see, the men are instructed, we want you to come up and pray for all the people that are grieving or sick. Now that's your prayer. Make sure you know your assignment. You're going to come up and pray for Thanksgiving. And you're going to come up and pray that God will open doors for us for evangelism. You understand? Their prayers are very specific. And I like that. And so, I do not try to change the culture until the culture violates with the scripture. Now, in some of the African villages, I asked permission, can I talk to the chief? Because in some of those villages, that the young girls go topless until they're married. The moment they're married, then they cover themselves. And the chief says, well, they're advertising. This is what you get. I said, but it's immodest. In some of the African villages, I have met men that had five wives. Now, I can't accept that. So you understand what I'm talking about. I don't try to change the culture unless the culture is violating the scriptures. Now, when I go to Taiwan, to China, to Japan, I eat with chopsticks. When I go to Sri Lanka, India, I eat with my fingers. I can adjust to what their culture is. Now, I know you would love to see if when I go to Sri Lanka, I don't wear pants like I'm wearing tonight. They give me a long longi cloth that wraps around me three times. And I know some of you would love to see me in a dress. But I'm willing to do that. That's their culture. And I'm willing to do that even though I'm not so comfortable in it, but it doesn't violate the scriptures. Does that make any sense to you? All right, now as Mike said, as I go along, when I'm talking about different things, I want you to feel free to stop me. Now, maybe you've seen that TV show, The Wizard of Oz. You know, and the hurricane took them away, and then Dorothy looks at Toto and says, we're not in Kansas anymore. Well, when I'm going overseas, we're not in America anymore. And if you want everything to be like it is in West Carrollton, Ohio, stay in Ohio. I've taken over 100 people with me, and I have to lecture them time and time again before we leave. We're going into a different culture. And so don't compare that. I don't ever want to hear you say, that's not the way we do it in America. We're not going there to make Americans out of them. Now, planning any trip, you have to ask yourself, what is the purpose of this trip? Who invited you to make this trip? You know, what if it's just like if one of the men here said, I think I'm going to go next month to Texas and hold them a gospel meeting. Well, who invited you? And see, sadly, some of the places I could name for you, Americans are inviting themselves to go to those places, and they often choose dates that are very inconvenient. They might go right during the time that they need to be harvesting their rice, and they're working 15 hours a day to get the rice in, and this American, thinking that he's so important that everybody would want me, and you've got to say, okay, now so there's a joke that I tell. I was telling this to Mike yesterday. Somebody asked me, because see, Mike has been to Sierra Leone, and somebody asked me, well, Bob, you've named all these African countries you've been to. How come you've never been to Sierra Leone? And I said, I'm going to answer that like I saw this woman on television. She was 82 years old. She had never been married. And the reporter asked her, why did you never get married? She said, because nobody ever asked me. Now, that's the way it is. Why have I not been to Sierra Leone? Nobody's ever asked me. I only go to places where I have an invitation, unless I'm going to a place where there are no churches. Now, see, I can go into Vietnam and I can go into China to try to help establish the church. Does that make sense? And if you don't understand, ask more questions. Who arranged the schedule? Now, in January, I was in Honduras, and we did Vacation Bible School. Vacation Bible School in January? You see, in Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, Vacation Bible School is always in June and July, isn't it? It's when the kids are on their school vacation. Well, guess what? Honduras, their vacation is December and January. And so that's why I go each January to do a Vacation Bible School. They arrange the schedule. I have to figure out what my expenses will be. Now, sometimes there are families that will invite me to stay in their home, but they don't have enough money to provide my meals for me. And so I put it into my budget. Okay, if you're allowed me to stay in your home, and I'm willing to cook, but if you want to cook, then I'll buy the food. So these are some of the things that we have to work out on the expenses. It's very important from country to country to know as much of the culture as you can, not to interfere with your Bible teaching. Now, a typical American man, if you're sitting on a train or a bus, the way that you might cross your leg and put your foot up on your knee like that, you can't do that in Russia. In Russia, I saw that. You moved it real quick. But see, that's the way we sit, right? That's comfortable for a man. But you see, in Russia, they have a lot of pigeons. And pigeons do a lot of droppings, and then you step on it, and then some of that yucky stuff is on the bottom of your shoe. And so if I sit where you see the bottom of the shoe, it's equal to saying a nasty word for manure. And so you have to learn to sit flat-footed. My first two trips to the Philippines, I was making mistakes and not knowing it. I had eaten in this woman's home, and I thanked her for the food, and she said, well, I'm sorry you didn't like it. I said, look, I emptied the plate. I mean, it was delicious. Well, I'm sorry you didn't like it. We went through that about five or six times, over and over. I'm sorry you didn't like it. Well, finally, when she left the room for a moment, I leaned over to one of my buddies, Filipino, and I said, what am I doing wrong? And he said, you haven't belched. Now, see, I grew up in an environment in Kentucky, if I belched in front of Grandma, real quickly, you better apologize for that. Well, now, let me tell you, I have learned now how to trap air. And I can let out a big loud one. And when I do, the woman said, well, thank you. I'm glad you liked it. You see, that's just part of their culture. Now, if you go into any of the British Empire countries, South Africa, Zimbabwe, I made this mistake in London, England. I was eating at the Hard Rock Cafe, of all places. And the waitress came by and wanted to know if I needed anything. I said, yes, please, bring me a napkin. And she walked away. And some of you are laughing. You know what that is. So she walked away. She came back in about 2 minutes. You need something? I said, please, I need a napkin. She went and talked to one of the other waitresses. That waitress came over and said, can I help you? I said, I just need a napkin. She went and told the manager. The manager came and put his hand on my shoulder and said, are you okay? I said, yes, I just need a napkin. In British culture, a napkin is a baby's diaper. Because they will say, go change the nappy. You need to try to learn as much of the culture as you can. When communism first fell, I took off to Romania and Hungary. One of the ladies in Hungary was the first one to finish our Bible correspondence course from Bowling Green. She was a high school English teacher. Her husband was the curator for the culture museum in that village. And she had two sons. The oldest boy was in the army. Now, she and I had corresponded, you know, an English teacher. We did a lot of corresponding. She taught English. And so I thought, every woman loves flowers, right, Debbie? So I stopped to buy a bouquet of flowers. I'm on my way to her flat, what we would call an apartment. And so I walk into this florist, and she didn't speak any English, and I didn't speak any Romanian. And I said, I want that bouquet right there. I thought, well, maybe somebody's already prearranged that. So I said, okay, that one. I pointed to a third one. That one. So I thought, well, I'm not going to ask her anymore. I just reached up and grabbed one of them. And I'm holding the bouquet of flowers, and I reach in and get the money. I don't know what this money is. This is my first day in this country. So take whatever you need. I felt so good walking out of that florist. I'm going over to Margot's house, and I know she's going to love these flowers. And so I go up and I knock on the door, and we've seen pictures of each other on the internet, but this is our first time to meet. She opens the door. I recognize her face. She recognized my face. She looks at the flowers. She lets out a blood-curdling scream, and then she falls down to her knees. I thought, well, I sort of thought she might be excited about it, but not. Okay, in Hungary, if you want to do something really special and sweet for your wife, you give her 3 carnations or 3 roses. A dozen is only reserved for one thing, and that's to announce a death. Her son's in the army, and I'm standing at the door with a dozen flowers. I had to apologize. See, I try to spend time when I'm going to a new country. I try to learn the culture. And I've learned a lot over the years. This one in the Philippines, Thailand, Indonesia, China, Vietnam, Japan. See, in Ohio, I might say, come here just a minute. I need to talk to you. That's okay in Ohio, isn't it? In Asia, doing that is equal to doing that. That's a very vulgar. So what you have to do, you do it this way.
I said, hey, I need to talk to you. So something as simple as a hand motion can hurt you preaching the gospel. And I don't want to take you with me overseas if you're really, really picky on what you're going to eat. Because many of them are very, very poor. And many of them are giving you the best that they can. And if you're unwilling to eat that, that is such an insult. Now the question is often asked, well, who can go on trips? Well, I've taken every age imaginable. Here are three college kids from Indiana. Here is my friend Robin Bauer from South Africa. Here is Iva Baker, 73 years old, from Williams, Indiana. Now, she taught ladies' classes. She taught classes for teenage girls. She taught children's classes. And, oh, she was so valuable. Here is one of the teams that I took. This was in 2012. Here's one of the classes in Kenya. And so a college girl in the white and then children's classes outside like that. Here's another one of the teams. We started taking some husband and wife teams, younger couples. And then here's a group. There was actually wound up with the D-Huts, three generations. On the left here, Lillian lived in Singapore, but she traveled as our translator going into China. We're standing here in front of the Forbidden City. And then there's this Howard and his sweet wife from Birmingham, Alabama. And he just recently died in a horrible disease. I don't remember the name of it. But slowly, one lobe at a time in the brain was dying. And the doctor told him, said, the brain is a computer, and everything that you've ever heard your whole life is stored in there. And words that you've never ever used before, but you've heard them. And you knew those were bad words. You've never used them. But that's going to be one lobe that when it dies, then you're going to start belting all of these bad words. And so he was working as a chemistry teacher in high school. And knowing that could happen tomorrow, he chose to retire from teaching. The church asked him to keep preaching, knowing that if something like that happened, one of the men would go up and help escort him out. But they were patient with him. He did get to preach for an extra 6 months before things got real bad. Here was one of the ladies from California. In one of the villages where we were, here is my preaching buddy, Jack Hafer from Salem, Oregon, and then Kayra Payton from Elizabethtown, Kentucky. This is Rita Cummings from Mayfield, Kentucky. She was a nurse, and she went along to help. I have a foundation, and I use donations into my foundation that we often we do free medical clinics for the children. Now, see, here you can probably go to the health department and either get your measles or mumps shot free, or some places it might cost you $5. In the Philippines, a measles shot would be $150. When a dad only makes $15 working in the rice field, and so they can't afford any of their vaccinations. Now, this is an old picture, because this is my three grandchildren, is that Emily is now a sophomore at Florida College, and that's her sister there beside her who's getting ready to graduate from high school in May. But I'm just throwing this picture in there to show you different ages. You saw Iva at 73, and then you see Titus here at 5. And so I've taken all ages. I've taken married couples. I've taken single couples. I've taken a lot of senior citizens. Now let's talk about the places we go for worship. This is where I just returned from Aruba just a couple of weeks ago, and I wish I had enough time to tell you. Let me make a short version of it. They discovered oil on the island of Aruba, and so the Exxon Oil Company built a refinery, and they sent 10 American families to go work the refinery. Three of the families were members of the Church of Christ. There was no Church of Christ on the island. It was either Catholic or heathenism. And so these three families met every week to have worship, partake of the Lord's Supper. Their contract was for 3 years. They'd been there 2.5 years. And then one Sunday, one of them looked over at the other and said, "You realize that in just 6 months, our contract's up and we're going back home. We've been here for 2.5 years and this island is no better off than when we got here. I've not tried to convert a person. I've not even invited anybody to come to our Sunday worships. Have you?" And the three of them repented. They called a preacher in Texas and said, "Can you come for 2 or 3 weeks and we'll have preaching every night?" 15 people were baptized. And I met some of those very earliest Christians. And one lady gave me a spiritual spanking. She said, "You think it matters what you believe? You think it matters about faith and matters about church? Then why did it take you so long to get here?" Said, "If you'd have come 25 years ago, I could have been a much stronger Christian than what I am today." And so the first church built this building, and this was called the English Church. This is at St. Nicholas, because you see, it's just not far from the gate of the refinery where these Americans worked. But they grew, they converted, and finally they said, "We need another church. We need a church in the Papamento language." And so that's now the church called Tamarine. In 5 years, they baptized 125 people. I'm just trying to show what can be done if there is a will and a determination to get involved. This church is a building of a church in Australia that's over 100 years old. They've never had a preacher in 100 years. They practice what is called mutual edification, that every man takes his turn. Okay, you're going to preach next Sunday, you're the next Sunday, you're the next Sunday, and just all the men take turns. This is where that I have preached in Scotland. They rent the upper room in this building, and I love going there. That's where I trace my ancestry back from. This was in the library at Russia, and some great students. I went to Ghana, and I did two things. During the daytime, I had classes like what you see right here, and I advertised it as leadership development. Would you like to be a song leader? Would you like to be a Bible teacher? Would you like to be a preacher? Would you like to someday meet the qualifications and serve as an elder? Now, if you're interested in leadership development, I want you to come to the morning classes and bring your wife with you. Because you're not going to ever be a good leader, whether we're talking about, you know, a preacher, an elder, you're not going to be a good leader if you don't have the backing of your wife. So we had classes like this in the daytime, and then at nighttime, I rented the convention center, and we had 2,000 people at nighttime, opening it up to everybody. Here's a typical class in India. I don't try to change the culture. The women always sit on the opposite side of the building. I've asked the men, "Why do you think this culture got started? Men, husbands and wives don't sit together." And here's what he said: "No, we're here to worship God. And there's a tendency, even with husbands and wives, one of you might lean over and start whispering to the other one about something. And we don't want anything to disturb our purpose for being here and our worship to God. This is a typical class in some of the places in the Philippines. They don't have church buildings. So we just sit on a bench under a tree. Now here's a church in the Philippines that does have a church building. And so this one is in Manila. This was the first church that we knew of in the Philippines that had elders. But then there are little churches like this that would meet at someone's home. This one's just on the front porch. Here is in Sri Lanka. The man in the white shirt there. You can see me in the yellow shirt, then the guy in the blue shirt, and then the guy in the white shirt. He had become a believer, and he had been baptized for the remission of his sins, and he invited all of his neighbors to come, especially he wanted all of these children. And so he wanted me to teach the creation story, because they all believe in reincarnation. And it's hard for me to preach in any of the countries that believe in reincarnation. Sri Lanka, India, several of the other places. Can you imagine trying to teach and then a fly lands on your lip and you're not allowed to swish it away? Because see, that might be somebody's grandmother. Because in reincarnation, they believe there is no ending. You die and then you start again. You might come back as a fly. You might come back as a frog. You might come back as a dog. They're hoping eventually you come back as one of those Brahma bulls. That's the highest form of human life. Now right now would be a good time for you to stick your hand out beside and pat the comfort of that chair. Because here would be your pew in Zimbabwe. And we're going to have classes for 8 hours. You think you'd like to sit there for 8 hours? Some of the women walked over the mountain. They walked 8 hours to get to where I was and then slept under the trees in the sand in order to sit here for Bible classes for 8 hours. Here's some of our classes in Kenya. Here's the preacher. This is Dang in Vietnam. This would be typical with the dogs and all eating on the sidewalk cafe. We're having a bowl of soup. And when we think about the Christians from around the world, this is Peter in Belgium. I've stayed in his home several times. And Peter and his brother and his mother were the only members of the church. And he is ridiculed at work. He is made fun of. Why don't you go with us to the bar tonight and drink a few beers? Why don't you go with us into Amsterdam? Let's go get us a prostitute tonight. And he's different. And people often make fun of him. Now here is Marlene and Peter in Indonesia. That's the whole church. And I've been there on several occasions. I made 3 trips to Cairo, Egypt, to try to convert this one dude. He was a strong Muslim, but he had an open heart. And so I made 3 trips to try to teach Toddy. Now, in a Muslim country, you have to be very secretive. Now, in a communist country like Vietnam or like China, if I'm caught teaching the Bible, I can go to prison. In a Muslim country, if I'm caught, I could have my head cut off. And so we can't just stay in the motel room and say, let's have 8 hours of classes in the motel room. The maid would immediately call the soldiers. I mean, how many of you would go to Egypt and stay in your motel room? You're going to go do touristy stuff, aren't you? And so I told her, I said, we've got to get out of the room. And so here on this day, we rented a camel and rode out into the Arabian desert and then turned the camel back in and then set out under some trees where we could have Bible studies. Sometimes we'd take a bus ride and go down to one of the temples, and then there we could have classes. And he finally was baptized in the swimming pool at the motel in Cairo, Egypt. He eventually came to America, and he went to Florida College on a student visa. And see, once you finish your classes on a student visa, you've got 60 days to get out of the country or you're illegal. Well, Toddy didn't want to leave. He had never studied the Bible before. He had never sung hymns of praise before. He had never prayed with a room full of Christians before. And he loved it so much, he signed up for another four-year degree. So he stayed 8 years at Florida College. And then he got him a job working with Air Canada. And he was living in Clearwater, Florida. And he would fly to Toronto and then get on the plane there. And he worked as the translator going from Canada to Egypt. Well, then COVID shut the flights down. So he lost his job. It hurt his manliness because he had gotten married and his wife was having to be the only provider, and that really bothered him. But I'm happy to tell you, he now has a wonderful job. He's into real estate. He recently set a company record, and so it's really good. In South Africa, we often would buy cases of Bibles and distribute those. And we would call the men up and said, I don't have enough Bibles for everybody. So I want you to be honest with me and tell me, you know, I'm just going to be able, you're either going to get four or six, depending upon the size of the congregation. And I want you to be honest with me and tell me which ones you think would be the best students that would read it and study it. And I said, maybe on my next trip, that I will have more money and I can buy more. And I've been doing this now for several years. My foundation is about 25 years old. And so as people make donations, then I spend more. And so that's just simply the way that it works. This young man, Wynn, I met him when he was about in the fourth grade. And I have made 9 trips, I think, to Malaysia. And this is what he looks like now. And then last year, he led one of the prayers at the Florida College lectures. And this is Ming Wei. He was one of my students in China. And then later, while I was lecturing in Singapore, he was there getting his PhD, and he attended all my classes in Singapore. And then when he graduated, he got his PhD in mathematics. And right at that time, I found out Florida College was looking for a math teacher. So I contacted the school and I said, look, he was my student. I know him as a student. I don't know him as a teacher. I'm just telling you, he has a PhD. I'm not going to stick my neck out and say he's a good teacher. I don't know. I'm just introducing you. You interview him, you find out what you think, and they fell in love with him, and he's now a math teacher at Florida College, and I'm amazed when I meet a lot of his students. One young girl just 2 or 3 years ago said, never in my life did I ever think that I would go into a math class and come out knowing a Bible verse better. That he uses Bible verses to illustrate something he's trying to make the point on in his mathematics class. All right, there's my little friend George and his wife Gabrielle. And quite a contrast. Contrast in color, contrast in size. But the contribution on Sunday morning is only large enough to pay for the rent for the Sunday morning worship. So Sunday night, and any of the Bible classes during the week, has to be in their home. And But a wonderful couple. I love them. They have two grown children, and the church is doing good. This picture is very emotional for me because Abraham was under the misconception that I was coming to China to try to encourage him. The truth is, I spent time with Abraham because of what an encouragement he was to me. Abraham was a college professor. He had a PhD. He wrote the textbooks that they were using in all of the classes in China. And then somebody snitched on him. Somebody reported that he had become a believer in Jesus Christ. And he was called in and given the opportunity to deny it. And he said, I will have to stand up for my faith in Jesus. He spent 20 years in prison. And they abused him. They would strip his shirt off, and 10 soldiers would take their belts and they would beat him, and the blood was running down his front and his back. And then on one of the days, they turned the belts around and started beating him with the metal buckles. And one of the buckles hit him in the left eye, and that blinded him. You can see the weakness in that eye. He was my first student every morning. 7 o'clock, he'd knock on the door. And I said, what are we going to start studying today? He said, let's study the book of Matthew. We covered all 28 chapters. Not in one day, in the 2 weeks. When we finished, he came back the next day. I said, what do you want to study today? He said, let's study Matthew. I said, Abraham, we just finished. Yep, but repetition's the best teacher. He said, I teach that in my classes, and I believe it in Bible. As soon as you finish it, start it again. Repetition is the best teacher. He was one of the most amazing men. Sadly, he recently had a stroke, and he's now gone to his rest with the Lord. Here's some classes I had in Ghana with several of the preachers and their wives. This is the convention center there. Here is in Kenya. The church building in the background there is built out of the bricks that they made out of elephant dung. And so very unusual. I've had the good opportunity in several countries to be able to go into the colleges or the high schools and speak to the English classes. And they were some of the most attentive, the most... You could have heard a pin drop. If they wanted to speak, they would raise their hand, and when I would point to them, they would stand and said, teacher, I'd like to know, and then they'd ask their question. But I love working with students like this. This was a preacher training class that I did in Mozambique, and you can see here one of the lessons was the church's role in developing elders. And so we sometimes have classes under the tree because we don't have a church building. And we don't have the money to rent a building to take us in out of the hot, hot sun. Here was one of the vacation Bible schools down in Aruba. This is the preacher and his wife and 3 children in India. Here is another picture showing at Thang's home, that the church meets there during the night weeks. And so, often the question is asked about what do you eat when you go on trips like this? Well, sometimes you have a big feast. Sometimes they're good cooks, and you've got chicken, you've got beef, you've got fish, you've got pork. You're going to have, always, you're going to have rice. And, you eat plentiful. And they have fresh bananas, they have watermelons, they have papaya. And then sometimes we'll go to a restaurant. Now this one was a meter long pizza. Because this Filipino woman married an Italian man. And they're living there now, and they've opened an Italian pizza restaurant. And so they wanted something to specialize, so they called it a meter-long pizza. You can see it's really three different pizzas on one pan, but I will tell you, it was delicious. For 3 weeks, I was given my choice for lunch and for dinner. I could have, at one of the meals, I could have beans and rice, and the next meal, I would have rice and beans. Now, I ate that, beans and rice and beans, twice a day for 3 weeks. I would love to have had a bologna sandwich. I would love to have had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But I survived. God has taken care of me. Here's where we're cooking in Zimbabwe. You see the big oil drum that says Caterpillar? But we cleaned the drum out and we used that to cook. And then I would buy 100 pounds of corn and we'd take it to the mill and have it ground. And it's called mealy meal. Think of it in terms of thick grits. Thick. Okay, now you eat a bowl of this on Monday, and then Tuesday and Wednesday you don't eat. You drink a lot of water, and it swells up inside you. The typical child in some of these villages are eating three times a week, not three times a day. But it helps you survive. Sometimes I have extra donations into the foundation, and they say, Bob, use this at your discretion. Now see, if someone tells me, I'm giving you this money for medicine for children, that's the only way that will be spent. If they say, here's $200 to buy Bibles, that's the only way it will be spent. If they say, use this one for a funeral. Now see, I've had experiences where that I would go to a home at night after I preach. They still have what they call wakes, where that you stay with the corpse 24 hours a day. And after a few days, they seal the casket off with a piece of glass because the body's starting to smell. They don't embalm. They don't have the money for embalming. But they can't bury because they don't have the money to buy a burial plot. And so they have a little glass jar at the head of the casket. And at night, when anybody comes to visit, if you put any coins in there, then when everyone's gone, the family counts it. And we still don't have enough. And so after my third night visit, I said, how much more is lacking? And they counted it and gave me a figure. And I'm happy to say that when they counted it that night, there was enough that the next day we could do the burial. And there was a family from Indiana that gave me the money that said, here, you can buy yourself a goat. And so we were able to have barbecue because I like good meat, but I don't like dog. I know of five times I've eaten dog. I prefer it to be barbecued rather than to be boiled with the onions like this. Now, one of the preachers in Vietnam has a large dog farm, and he sells the meat to the restaurants. And so I've eaten dog, and I've eaten the big giant lizards that they have. Now, this is the fish that's cooked with hot chilies. And that'll burn your mouth so bad you don't know whether it was good or bad. But I do like it because I do like hot food. Now, this is before it was starting cooking. We're going to make some chicken foot soup. And now, the advantage of this, you get to eat the feet and then you use the toenails to sort of clean your teeth out. Now, down in Chile, I had crocodile foot, and
It's tough.
There are a lot of other things that I've eaten that I like better. These are grubs. You just put them in the skillet and put a little bit of oil and shake them around on the stove and get them real, real hot. And then when you put them in your mouth and pop them, it's like hot butter popping inside your mouth. Are you getting hungry now? Aren't you glad all the choices you had a few moments ago? Now, I have sometimes on my phone, I've taken pictures. I should have made a picture there today. Because it's hard to explain to some of the people in third world countries the abundance of food that is available to you at a potluck with Christians. There's a lot of things that's hard to explain. How do you teach the story about Jonah and the whale when they've never seen a river? They've never seen a lake. They've never seen a mud puddle. In some of my villages, for 3 years, there has been no rain. No rain. So it's hard to talk to them about Jonah. Now, according to the Hindu scriptures, they accept 33 million gods. They worship everything. They worship the clouds. They worship the rocks. They worship the trees. They worship the birds. They worship the cow. Things are a little different on the highways in India. I believe this one was a little bit overloaded, but not as bad as the taxi. You can pay to ride into town on this one. In Belize, we would stand at the speed bump where the bus comes through the city, and we would offer, we've got it in English, we've got it in Spanish. And so we would offer them Bible lessons. Now, some of them are on a 5-hour bus ride. That's boring. And they would see us standing there, and they would lean out the window of the bus and stick their hands out for us to give them something to read. And then people coming across, going to one of the shops there, that they would then take it. The cows roam the streets in India. India has 122 major languages. And this is what their money looks like. And you can see on the left-hand side the languages there. 56 letters in their alphabet. 56 letters in their alphabet. And when my translator, I could say a word that only had 3 letters in it, and he had to say 3 words to say it. I could preach for 10 minutes, and then it took him 30 minutes to translate it. And so it's some getting used to. Now, here's one that I couldn't get used to. I don't want you to elevate Bob, but it would insult their culture if I didn't allow them to try to honor me. And so they would bring, at the end of services, they would bring bouquets of flowers. They would bring leis. Now, look at this place. I mean, they just kept weighing me down with these leis. They even used my full name, not Bob, James Robert. But again, that's their culture. This is their culture. That's typical city traffic. What we might get somewhere in 15 minutes, it might take you 3 or 4 hours in some of these Indian cities. Well, Bob got in trouble right here. I gave my phone to a guy and said, "Will you make my picture?" And then people started screaming in every direction, "Don't touch God!" This is the highest form of human life, according to the Hindus. The Brahma bull is the highest form of human life. We went to the river to baptize a few people. Now, what do you see in that picture? You see all the bracelets? You see all the clothes? Do you see all the human hair? When the woman dies, everything that had been hers is to be removed from the house. You just go down by the river and start throwing all of her necklaces and all of her bracelets. You remove all of her clothes. You wrap her then in the bed sheet she was lying on when she died. You put her on the bamboo float. You douse her in gasoline. You catch her on fire and shove her out to float down the river into the ocean. That's their culture. But see, while she's burning and then she floats out into the ocean, then she will sink into the ocean, but then they believe immediately she's reborn. That's the doctrine of reincarnation. Now, in some of the places in Vietnam, you cannot drive an automobile. I have to rent a motorcycle. And so we go up these dirt roads, trying to go up into the mountains where we can't get caught. This is a communist country. We're wanting to worship God. We built a church building up there on this farmer's property. I told you he raises dogs and sells the meat for the restaurant. One worship service. And the communist soldiers came in with sledgehammers and knocked down the building. And they said, "We don't want Christianity. We don't want you talking about Jesus. If we catch you doing it again, you go to prison." We take a lot for granted, don't we? The freedoms that we have. Now, the amount of hours it took. See, they would stay every Sunday after worship in order to mix the mortar and to build the walls. And so here's one of the classes in Belize. This one was a recent class in the Philippines. And there were so many preachers that wanted to come to my classes because I was teaching a series for the whole week. I was teaching 8 classes a day. I was running out of spit, Mike. 8 classes a day on the period between the testaments, 400 years of silence. And some of the preachers from way up north had never studied that. And everybody wanted to come. Well, I was thrilled that they could come. I was happy to teach. But then we ran into problems. Where are they going to sleep? So I had to buy a few cheap mattresses. And then I had to buy a whole lot more food than what I was expecting to have to buy. But 8 people slept in this one room right here, but no complaints. They were thrilled to be there for the classes. Here were 3 of my students in Tianjin, China. These 4 students are holding a Bible for the first time. We're going to read the book of Genesis, chapter 1, for the first time. Creation. Now, here's the way I begin my classes with Chinese students. And I wish I had an hour and a half to teach you the whole lesson that I teach them. I said, "You know, for a long time, the only thing I knew about your Chinese language is when I see something on the wall when I go to the Chinese restaurant. But now I've been studying it. The Chinese language is the oldest written language in the world. And the Chinese language is based on the first 12 chapters of the book of Genesis." And they look at you and say, "Ah, that's impossible." Well, the Chinese language was written way before Buddhism. And it was written way before communism. And so what I have done, I have Chinese words that I have laminated. And I said, "Now let's work fast. I'm just going to pull the picture up and I want you to say the word." But see, the Chinese words are what I call word pictures.
They put several things together in order to create this. So I would pull something up and temptation. I said, now break it apart. Tell me what you see. Break it apart. Well, see, the outside wall represents a garden. And then there's two trees in the garden. This is the word temptation. The next word, pain. I said, break it apart. Woman chooses wrong tree. This is the word ship. I said, break it apart. 8 people on a big boat. I said, where did your ancestors get all of these ideas? And then here's a big word, migration. Break it apart. Oh boy, that one. Something, what was it? Babel? Languages were confused. They didn't have cars. Most of them had to walk. So migration means that you walked from the west, Babel, coming over into China. The one that really fascinates them, when we go back and talk about that garden, and I pull up this word, and I said, break it apart. Don't laugh. And they always start laughing. They said, I don't understand it. It's something about eating the fruit, and then you know that you're naked. What does no clothes have to do with eating a fruit? And then I let them read the story in Genesis. Now see, what I try to do with this, if I can get them, that one, I've never had a student yet. If I can give that first lesson of my respect for the Chinese language, then they want to learn more. I said, your ancestors believed in the same God that I'm here in China to try to teach you. Thomas and his wife were great students. And we sang several songs together. They'd never sung spiritual songs before. They wanted a songbook. I only had one. He asked, could he borrow it? And Thomas and his wife stayed up until 2 a.m. to handwrite their own songbook. That's the excitement with some of the students. Now, the Chinese girls are usually small enough. You can twist them into a pretzel. And you can baptize them in the bathtub. And there were many of the young girls. Now, it was harder to find a way to baptize the men. We had to be sneaky about it. And when I tell this story, I'm going to go ahead and tell it to you. If you want to fuss with me and fight with me, we'll just deal with that later. But I would go to the Holiday Inn and ask if I could rent their health club. Now, it's only going to take me about 2 minutes to take this guy in there and baptize him, right? But if we walk in dry and in 2 minutes we come out wet, they're going to immediately call the soldier. So we have to stay in there at least 30 minutes. So we get in the water and we splash water on each other. And then we start playing games and I'll pick him up and give him a slam dunk. And you know, everybody's watching us. And so we have to pretend that we're just entertaining ourselves. But then after several minutes, I said, all right, let's calm down now. Now it's time for the purpose that we came in here. Now we're getting serious. Well, see, these people had already watched me throw him under the water. They had watched us play this game of horse. But now it's going to be slower and with reverence.
that now I'm going to submerge him, that he can contact the blood of Jesus and his sins would be washed away. Now, let me tell you a shocking part of the story. Tom, that I don't have his picture here, he was with me for 7 hours. And he said, I need to wash away my sins. So we went and rented the pool. Came back then to the hotel. He said, I want you to teach me how to pray. I said, no, I don't need to teach you something to memorize. I want you just to talk to God from your heart. He just forgave you of every sin. Just talk to him. I wish I had a recording of that prayer for you to listen to. I was emotional and was crying listening to him pray. And then he later started crying for a different purpose. We were both standing at the door saying good night to each other. And he said, I just can't thank you enough. You've spent the whole day with me. I'm going home as a Christian. I want to do something to honor you. Tomorrow I'm going to send a prostitute to the hotel. I said, Tom, don't do that. I said, that would be a sin. And tears started rolling down his cheek. He said, Bob, until this morning I never heard the word sin. Until these hours with you today, I didn't know anything that it mattered right or wrong. I repented of everything that I knew I had done wrong. But I've got so much more to learn. Can I come back in and sit down and you tell me what makes the prostitute a sin? And I explained to him God's plan was one man, one woman in marriage. Sex is not a four-letter word. Sex is beautiful when it's in marriage. He said, then I need to get married. The next morning, he called the matchmaker. You see, they have arranged marriages in China. The matchmaker brought in 10 beautiful girls. If I had been a single boy, I would have picked any of them. But for some reason, Tom looked at all 10 of them and he said, no, I don't think so. She said, all right, come back tomorrow. I'll bring 10 more. And she did. And he said, I'll take number 3. And they got married. And they've been happily married for 20 years. And they have a child. You see, culture is different. But you see, he didn't know that fornication was a sin. And there are a lot of people in Ohio and in Kentucky. There are a lot of these young college couples that are either in the back seat of a car or meeting in a motel room. And they don't know that what they're doing is a sin. And so we have to try to reach these people and to teach these people. After World War II, we left all of the Jeeps in the Philippines. They have now elongated the beds and turned them into what is called a jeepney. So this is your typical way to get from village to village or city to city. I've had the good opportunity of preaching inside all three of the prison systems in the Philippines. This one is called minimum security. Now they're allowed to leave the prison each day. The gates are unlocked. They have to, at 10 o'clock, they have to be there for roll call. They have to be back then at 4 o'clock for roll call. Then they have to be back at 7 o'clock when the gates are going to be locked. But see, at minimum security, they can go in and out. At minimum security, You meet with a counselor, a vocational counselor, to try to determine what you are best suited for in vocation. For 1 year, they will train you either to become a carpenter, to become a plumber, to become a mechanic, to become a chef. Because, you see, when you leave prison, they don't ever want to see you back in here. And they only have about a 5% return. I wish that our system in America could learn this. This is medium security. And then, I thought I had also maximum. I have preached at all three. Yeah, it looks like a prison. I have preached at all three of them. And I developed a good relationship with the government. And the government said, Bob, we will give you a piece of land inside the compound, inside the camp. We will give you a piece of land free if you can build a chapel on it. And so, thanks to a lot of prayers and a lot of donations from a lot of Christians. See, that's why I'm back up here. There, it's not fancy, but we're in out of the rain. We're in out of the hot sun. There is our chapel in the minimum security, and then we have a chapel in medium, and then we have a chapel then in maximum also. This is the National High School. Every student in high school is required one Bible class every day. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do that? And I talked to the principal, and the principal said, how can I tell the kids, don't steal, don't do drugs, don't get drunk, don't get the young girls pregnant. How can I tell them not to do that if I can't give them a reason? And if I can't tell them that's against what God wants? And so I always love all of the high schools. I love getting to go there and to lecture, and they're so quiet, they're so attentive. And then if we have enough time and open it up for questions, then they've got all kinds of questions. All right, let's close it out. And we're down to the sad part. Is that every year the Philippines gets hit with about 4 typhoons. This is right after one of the typhoons came through. This family has lost everything. Even the big boats, the ships, are up on the shore. All of these black bags are bodies. Here's a father that's carrying out his dead child. Water standing a couple of feet deep in the church building. Are we going to call off worship? Well, of course not. We're going to worship God, and we're going to have the Lord's Supper. Yeah, we got water. But God saved us. He preserved us. And so they went for their worship that day. This is where I'm standing in the bed of the river in Zimbabwe. I told you for 3 years there had been no rain. These young girls walked 3 miles to go to a well to pump it and bring water back to the village. That water is only used for cooking and drinking. These girls and many others that I talked with had not had a bath for 3 years. They go behind the bushes and remove their clothes and cover their body with sand and try to wipe off the perspiration. But you can't waste the water. And one of the days that I'll never forget, we had 2 or 3 men that wanted to be baptized. Where am I going to baptize them? There is no lake. There is no river. And these girls spoke up and says, we'll walk back to the well. You guys start digging a hole. And we dug a hole and put a tarpaulin down in it and some plastic. And these girls made two trips and brought back the water to fill up that hole so that we could baptize them. This is not from eating too many Big Macs. This is what starvation looks like. And many of the mothers have confessed to me that they put sand in their children's porridge. I said, don't you realize that the sand in the intestines, in the digestive system, is going to kill them? They said it usually lets them live another 3 or 4 months extra. That's starvation. I don't know whether that I ought to tell you this or not. I was arrested. I have a record. I was a criminal. Because my foundation bought a truckload of food to take in and feed these kids. And the president said that he had rather the children die than to accept American charity. But I love every one of these kids. And I've got thousands of pictures of me and these kids. And different women have donated Beanie Babies for me to take and give. And we took some blow bubble stuff. And you ought to have seen it the day that I took bubble gum. They'd never seen bubble gum. And they'd chew it for a little bit and then try to stretch it on the outside of their mouth. But then I took 6 harmonicas. I wish I had a tape recording. Because I do have a picture, I just didn't put it in this one, where they're all standing in line. Each one of them was going to get 90 seconds, a minute and a half, to blow their harmonica, then get out and go to the back of the line if you want to do it the second time. After 4 days, one of the young boys, after he had come and gone back and come and gone back and come and gone back, and this was the 4th day, he stood there and played their national anthem for me. He's one of them that got to keep the harmonica when I'm ready to come home. Well, these are just a few of the pictures. I'll close with this one. At the end of services, let's just use this building for an example. You're going to be the song leader. So you just stand up from where you are and you just start singing and walk out. And you step right outside the door and then you stand there. And then the next one comes out. He either shakes hands with you or embraces you heavy and stands right beside you. Then she comes out. He comes out. She comes out. You don't go home until you have hugged, embraced, kissed, or a big handshake with everybody that's there. And you know what they're singing? God be with you till we meet again. I've never been to this church where that I've watched this on Sunday. And the next Sunday go and everybody's back. At least one of them died during that week. And so they understand the brevity of life. And they understand the importance of family. So everybody hugs, shakes hands, prays for each other. May God be with you till we meet again. Well, what can be done? Lots of prayers. Lots of prayers. And I want to publicly thank you for the times that you have been able to assist in some of my trips. It means an awful lot to me. Now, Lord willing, in June, I'm going back to Honduras. In August, I'm going back to Kenya. Later on then, we've got more trips planned. I don't know. I've got several invitations on the desk. We just don't know which ones are going to fit into their schedule and in my schedule. Going back to Sweden, going back to India, going back to the Philippines. And so I appreciate your prayers. Now, I did all the talking. I'm sorry. I really meant to leave more time for you to ask. Any of you have any quick question you want to ask before we wrap it up? Well, thank you for being here. Yes?
Who's going to take your place?
Pardon?
Who's going to take your place?
I wish I knew.
Any of these people that have gone with you?
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to train. I'm 77 years old. I don't know how long the Lord's going to allow me to keep doing this. And what I'm about to say right now sort of scares me to say it. I've been trying to preach for 55 years. And right now, there are more churches looking for preachers than at any time in my 55 years of preaching. In another 10 or 15 years, I'm not for sure we're going to have many preachers. Now, when Mike and Debbie and I were in school, at that year, Florida College had 24 men getting a degree in Bible. They wanted to be preachers. Last year, they had one. The church in Danville, Kentucky used to have a preacher training program. They would have about 20 a year. Up near Chicago, Downers Grove, they had a preacher training program. Valley Station in Louisville had a preacher training program. Out in Washington. Yes. But most of those have closed their doors. And the sad thing is, there's a lot of the young men that want to be preachers, but mama don't want them to be. So what's going to happen to the future? And so that's why I gave up my salary and walked out of the pulpit. You know, it's okay if you want to laugh at me. Yeah, I sell aluminum cans. I have a little booth out at the antique mall. I'm able to live on less money than most people. But I'm doing what I love to do because I believe it's what the Lord wants me to do. And I'm trying to train others to follow in my steps. I've taken over 100 people overseas with me to try to whet their appetite. Now in June, I'm taking 5 young Florida College girls to Honduras where they can teach the children's classes. And maybe someday they can marry a preacher and then they can work as a team. But thanks for asking that question. Any other question? Was there anybody's hand that went up? All right. Mike, closing comments or prayer or what?